Next up on our agenda, we are still ahead of time. Next up was a scheduled 15-minute afternoon break. I'm kind of thinking that maybe we want to try to power through here. Is there anybody who disagrees with that strongly? If anybody needs a 5-minute break, let me know. Otherwise, I'm going to suggest we do power through. Let me look at our schedule here. So the next item is going to be led by Ryan Gordon. It is the Forestry Program for Oregon revisioning presentation and discussion. Is Ryan ready to go there?
I am. I'm here.
Perfect. Take it over, Ryan.
Great. Thank you very much, Chair Kelly and State Forester Mukimoto. My name is Ryan Gordon. I'm the Planning Branch Director. And I'm joined today by Danny Norlander and John Tokarczyk as well. Danny and I are going to work together on the presentation. And we've got John here on retainer to help us out with any tough questions or other history that we need some assistance with. I think I'll start off by apologizing for being the last agenda item or the last item on an agenda that I think has been pretty challenging. As I look at that, all the consent agenda items and some really difficult and challenging topics that we've just worked through, I think it really is, in a way, though, a good backdrop for this discussion of the revision for the board's strategic plan or the forestry program for Oregon. I've been reflecting on it through the day, and I just wanted to take a minute, you know, to really highlight that I think the discussion today really shows the breadth of the challenging issues that the board and the department are struggling with. You know, at a time when not only are we absorbing tremendous investment in the agency, but also going through a period of significant change and growth. And I know there's been a lot of conversation about that over the last months or maybe even years. But what better time than to start thinking about the strategic plan for the board? So with that, I'll go ahead and dive in and we can move to the next slide. So, again, I'm going to start out with a real brief and high-level overview of the existing FPFO, and this is a conversation that you may recall from the fall retreat. So I'll try to be pretty quick and move through those slides. And then Danny's going to follow behind me, offering some key concepts for consideration in the revision, as well as a framework and a timeline. And I did want to take a minute here as well just to mention that I'm really excited about the information session that we've got scheduled with the board on April 6th. I think that is going to be a really interesting day with some great conversation. So I'm just looking forward to joining all of you for that early next month. Can we move to the next slide? So some of these slides have a lot of detail. I don't expect that you'll pick up on all of it. If you're so inclined, you're more than welcome to take a look at the PDF and zoom in and look through some of those details. But I'll, again, like I said, highlight some key points. I wanted to start out just kind of big picture board planning. If you look at this graphic, which may be kind of small on your screen, there's kind of those two wings up on the top. And those are the inputs really coming into board and agency decision-making processes. So on the left, that sort of left wing, we look at all those policy inputs. On the right wing, talking more about environmental inputs. Those could be social, they could be actually be environmental. Those come together and we try to balance and reconcile those in setting priorities and building work plans. And we do that, and in order to do that, we need some kind of a lens. And that's really how I think about the FPFO or the board's strategic plan. Next slide, please. So again, you know, thinking of the FPFO as that lens through which all external inputs are focused, I think a few key points here. It's not a statute or a rule, rather the foundation for establishing the board's priorities, which in turn help to inform the agency's priorities. Having said that, it is important in this conversation as we move forward to remember that statute does define the scope of the board's authorities, and keeping those sideboards in mind when we start thinking about setting priorities and goals and indicators. In terms of kind of the hierarchy of strategic planning at the agency, the FPFO really sits at the top of that pyramid. Danny's used that analogy a few times. I'm going to steal it here today. And, you know, it helps to set the stage for the agency's strategic plan, for our operating plans, really for all of our work. All of that should tier up to the FPFO. And having said that, now I want to pause on this slide as well and mention that we are in a situation where we've got a few parallel planning efforts occurring at once. So as we embark on this process with this high-level strategic plan, we also have a need to re-engage with and complete a strategic planning process for the agency. And we're working on a 20-year strategy in shared stewardship. And I think, you know, ideally we'd have this FPFO finished off and in place before working on those other processes. But we've got to do it in parallel. And there are going to be some challenges there. But at the same time, I think there's some opportunity in being able to connect dots and have some good communication around how those products kind of grow up together. Next slide, please. So kind of jumping into the FPFO specifically, some of the mechanics. As it's currently framed, it helps to establish the board's missions, values, vision, goals, objectives, and indicators. And a couple of things that I think are worthy of noting. To this point, the decision has been that, you know, the vision is generally constructed around a 20-year horizon. And there's an 8-year implementation timeline for goals. And the indicators that have been developed are all intended to track the progress in achieving those goals. Next slide, please. Quick history. The first version of the FPFO came out in 1977 with a subsequent update in 1982. And those initial versions really focused almost exclusively on sustainable timber supply. And that was a pretty big conversation at that time. As we move closer to towards 1990 or the early 90s, I think we all can recall a lot of the conversation that was occurring then around forestry, a lot of challenging conversation. And so the revisions through the 80s into the early 90s, you know, reflect a lot of that discussion. And you start to see an increasing importance on the inclusion of broader environmental issues around forest management. It was the 2003 revision that first incorporated goals related to the Montreal process criteria, and the 2011 revision, which is the current version that we have built on that. A couple of things of note, sustainability has been a consistent theme throughout every version of the FPFO. And, you know, it's no surprise we're here having this conversation. We're overdue for the revision. I think we've already established that. Next slide, please. So a few high points of the current version. As I mentioned, it includes the Montreal process for sustainable forestry and tiers to 19 different indicators. And those are sort of outlined here in this colorful graphic. The current version represents a substantial shift away from timber supply to a focus on maintaining the forest land base. And this version also established board work plans and those eight-year cycles that I noted earlier for achieving the goals set out in the plan and for revising the plan itself. Next slide, please. The current version outlines seven goals. I've collapsed them a little bit in my comments here. They relate generally to support for adequately resourced institutions to support environmental, social, and economic policies. A focus on helping to ensure Oregon's forests meet broad demands for environmental, social, and economic needs. And there are a number of goals that are related to maintaining and improving the productive capacity of our forests, as well as protecting soil, water, plant, animal, and other natural resources. And a recognition of the importance of improving carbon sequestration and storage and reducing emissions. As I kind of conclude and pass the baton over to Danny here, I do want to highlight what I think are some challenges that we've discussed before and we really have the opportunity to address with the revision. I think those 19 indicators that we talked about briefly earlier have definitely proven to be challenging and a little bit unwieldy. The goals that are laid out are comprehensive, but also pretty broad. And the document itself, I think, is pretty complex. It hasn't been widely read and understood. And I think that last point is something that we've all discussed and agreed is really important to address, to really create something that is useful, straightforward, something that folks throughout the agency and throughout Oregon can pick up and quickly understand. So with that, I'm going to sort of that backward look at the past. I'm going to turn it over to Danny to talk a little bit about the revision and a proposal for the process moving forward.
And move the slide forward. Good afternoon, Chair Kelly, board members, and State Forester Mukamoto. I'm Danny Norlander. I'm the Forest Climate, Carbon, and Health Analyst in the Resource Planning or the Planning Branch. Still getting used to changing names. So I'm here today to talk about the future of the FPFO after Ryan provided that background. And looking forward at this revision, it is a substantial process and will likely take up a lot of time. I know that all of you have been well engaged with the department over the last year or so. So we look to continue that engagement, but probably outside board meetings as well as bringing in public engagement as well. So things that will be included are assessments, public engagement, board discussions, and a variety of other things there. Just kind of start off, we're gonna talk about a framework, what the timeline will be, and then further on down the road, we'll talk about the public engagement process. We do have the split up a little bit. So the initial revision of the FPFO, including the goals, mission, vision, values, et cetera, will take place and hopefully be accomplished in about a year. And then that will be followed up with development of the measures and the indicators beginning after that and have that done hopefully within about 18 months of that. So go ahead. So looking forward and keeping in mind that the Montreal Protocol has been used for the last two iterations of the FPFO, previous conversations have really led us to kind of describe climate smart forestry as the lens to look at the FPFO in the future. So that includes three things as was laid out in the climate change and carbon plan, and those are adaptation, mitigation, and social dimensions, another three-legged stool or triangle or whatever three-sided pyramid you want to choose for forestry. So that social dimension actually makes it four legs where we have communities and economies. And I'll describe those a little bit here with the next slides. Go ahead. So as we think about adaptation, it really requires active measures and seeks to build resilience to the effects of climate change. So this is adaptation of our forest lands, not of people to climate change, but adaptation of the forest. So that could be things like using different species, changing stand structure, and using a variety of management approaches across the entire landscape. It means that forest managers are looking to the future and not relying on historic means, norms and policies and practices. And it will require bold steps looking to the future to ensure that forests remain forests, that we aren't losing forests into the future as a result of climate change. It's important to note that our strong land use laws here in Oregon have really helped us maintain forests as forests, with roughly 97% of Oregon forest lands when those laws went into place, still in forestry. Go ahead. So we talked about mitigation. This is really how we're going to help the climate through our management. So what efforts are we going to put in place to increase carbon sequestration, to hold carbon out of the atmosphere and to make it so that there's less greenhouse gases in the atmosphere? That can be a variety of things, including different tree species. This slide got duplicated, or at least parts of it. Other things, including reducing fire emissions, increasing sequestration through carbon projects, through changes, and potentially other bold and broad things, including things like agroforestry or afforestation, reforestation on currently a non-forested lands. Things of that nature. Go ahead. And then the third leg there is that social or economic standpoint. Utilization of the state's forests for harvest of traditional foods, recreation, tourism, wood fiber, all support a diverse set of communities and economies throughout the state. A lot of those are in rural locations. We've all heard and speak a lot about the economic implications of forestry to rural communities. So how do the policies and procedures that we put into place as a board and a department impact those? And how do we think about that moving into the future in an uncertain world of climate change? So forests are very culturally significant to Oregon. I think everybody can attest to that, including a significant amount of the state's drinking water coming from forests, fish and wildlife habitat, urban and rural jobs, and many other things. Next slide. So climate smart forestry and sustainable forest management. Climate smart forestry really developed out of climate smart agriculture in the last decade or so. Together, they make up climate smart agriculture and forestry, which is a trending term when we look at federal legislation, federal policy moving down, including a lot of infrastructure dollars and other funding opportunities. It can be linked closely with sustainable forest management, already key to the FPFO from past revisions. And there are criteria and indicators that have been developed in other locations for climate smart forestry linked up with sustainable forest management in those areas. So we have kind of a background there that we can pull from and look at to see how it's been done in other areas and what the implications and the impacts are there. So as I was mentioning, the climate smart agriculture and forestry is key to the federal side. There's an executive order directing USDA to consider that and to provide funding along those lines. Next slide. So what do we do next? So this is kind of our soft start to the revision process. It's about a 6-week process here. This is the kickoff here. So April 6th, we'll have an informational session to provide a state and sector-wide view of that. And then at the April board meeting, we'll come back and we'll ask for a decision on the process moving forward and the acceptance of using climate smart forestry as the primary framework and the lens moving forward with this revision. After that, we'll begin to revise the mission, vision, values, purpose, and principles, develop and engage working clusters on adaptation, mitigation, social policy, and such. And then we'll come back to the board meetings with updates and full board work. We'll be working with each of you individually in small groups within those other working clusters, I suspect. And then looking to finalize the likely 2023 version of the FPFO about a year from now. And then that will be followed up with development of the criteria and indicators if the board decides to go that route. Next slide. So our timeline, as we're thinking about it, kind of that level setting workshop in April, come back in April, end of April for the decision moving forward. After that, we'll have a kind of a stakeholder engagement process, public engagement process to work on the different parts of that framework. Do some drafting, development of language and actual documentation, and then finalize the mission, vision, et cetera, probably in October. Do final edits and then come back to the board for approval and recommendation in March. There's a lot of work that'll take place amongst the board, amongst staff and the board, amongst stakeholders, public, throughout that whole process. And then, as I was mentioning, at the end of all of that, really look at the criteria and indicators so that the goals that would be set during the revision process can be tracked and accomplished and measured over time. I think that's about all I have. A few things to think about as we look at this in a global context. You know, we're in the midst of a mega drought that goes back 800 years to the dark ages. So it is very unprecedented times. We have seen the impacts of climate change on a wide variety of things, including timber supply, lumber supply, especially in like British Columbia, where increasing insects and diseases have had impacts all across Western North America with increasing wildfire, increasing storm events, destroying a wide variety of infrastructure and stuff that can impact lumber supply. So we got to remember that Oregon isn't by itself, and how do we integrate with the global context there as well will be important. That I think that's all we have. I'll turn it back over to Ryan for any final comments that he may have and then questions. So thank you for your time this afternoon.
I don't have anything else to add right now. I also appreciate the time and thanks, Danny, for putting together a good timeline and framework.
I wanted to say a few things about process. You know, I think about as I've looked at what we have currently, probably have heard me say this before, I see a big, big document with a lot of repetition as we do speak about the different goals and then the goals become, you know, the mission, values, goals. It's a lot. It's a lot to digest. And so I'm thinking trying to figure out how do we really start this process and start it well. And so I've been thinking about that. We really need to do a little reverse engineering and go back and think about what is this at the end of the day. It's a communication tool, right? And it's our customers, I think, are the citizens of Oregon, our stakeholders, and then to a large degree, ODF itself, the leadership and people who work through ODF. So to me, if you're going to have an effective tool, it's got to be usable and used. And so what I want to figure out, first of all, you know, is start with that whole concept of is it being used and who's using it and how often are they using it and what part of it are they using? And so, obviously people at the top levels of ODF are going to be more actively engaged, but who is it that we would probably be wanting to reach with the current document that we're not really? What's the level of familiarity with the current tool by foresters throughout the state that work for ODF? I mean, I'm just using that as an example, but the idea here is to start with a process to see what seems to be working about it and what's not working about it, and then what would be to start giving us some concept of how could we present this tool in ways that it is used more effectively. I just fear that we will go into a process and we will update it and we'll have a climate smart lens and all of that, but we'll still have something that's pretty dense and rarely used by many of the folks that probably should be using it. Okay, Chandra.
Thanks, Jim. Chandra Furay for the record. Thank you for this presentation. I think it was very responsive to a lot of the things that we've said over the, at least since I guess I've been on the board, which is also a year anniversary. But I do appreciate that. So my question kind of mirrors, I guess, Jim's, I'm curious how we're setting up the information session, because I think that may get to some of the points if we're structuring questions for all these different stakeholders to kind of provide us feedback. So I guess I'm wondering how structured that conversation is, and then if it's how much information we're giving them in advance in terms of the suggested structure. Or is it more kind of like Jim had suggested, is this a lessons learned based on how useful the existing framework is and where they see value or things we should consider moving forward? So I was just hoping you could give me a little more background on how we're structuring that session.
Sure. Thanks for the question. I'll tackle that one, and then maybe John or Ryan can follow up if I miss anything. So the April session is an informational session. And the idea really is to provide a level setting opportunity for the board to hear from a pretty large swath of constituents. So it'll have, doing mental math real quick, roughly 14 different panelists throughout the day. So it's gonna be a long day of listening and conversation. And we're really hoping that the panelists and the board both see it as an opportunity to have conversation with each other, amongst the groups, amongst each other, or with each other about the topics. And then as we move forward, that'll kind of provide the background for what the policies of the state should be. So we'll start off with, and I'm glad that you bring that up, because Congressman Blumenhauer's comments this morning about the work that Governor Kitzhaber has been doing kind of will come to play there, because he'll be kind of our keynote speaker for the day. And the white paper he's been working on will be available for that. He'll speak to the details within that. And then we'll go through a variety of different things, and including forest benefits, forest ownership, and then conversation. I have thought now, so my mind. So we have provided and are providing those panelists with kind of sideboards and direction about where to focus. We're trying to avoid people getting up and just having conversations about, oh, this is my organization, this is what we've been doing for the last 50 years. No, it's really meant to be forward-looking and where they see forestry in Oregon moving in the future. And John or Ryan, if you have anything to add there, please do.
I might just jump in real quick and also just offer some thoughts, reflections back, Chair Kelly, to what you had mentioned. And I think those are exactly the right questions we should be asking at the beginning of a strategic planning exercise. But I also would just reflect that I think this is an opportunity in many respects for a fresh start with this document. And I would like to really start with all of you to better understand how you would like to see this, this document ultimately used. And I think that from that starting point, we can then engage folks in the field at, you know, at ODF, as well as our external constituents and partners to help craft a document that gets to the issues and the information that you all decide is those priorities that you set, but communicates that in a way that is easy and understandable for folks to absorb, so they can pick it up and understand immediately what are those goals and priorities that the Board of Forestry and the department has. And I hope that this, I think my mind went right to where Danny said last for the session on April 6th, which is really that it's an opportunity for, that forward-looking discussion. So not just the usual, like, this is who we are and what we do, but to really explore some of the issues and understand or at least hear from the broad spectrum around social, economic, environmental concerns in forestry. So I'll stop there.
Okay, Carla.
Okay, thank you. Well, this program has really resonated with me, and Danny and Ryan, thank you. I think, Brenda and our U.S. Forest Service scientists and our own scientists in ODF are telling us to, expect more fire, more drought, more to come. The U.S. Forest Service scientists said 3 to 4 times over the next 30 years. And I think it really does, we really do need to challenge ourselves on sustainability. And so that's what I'd like to see in through this process, as we look at our air and water quality, wildlife, loss of life, loss of 7 communities. I think we all need to step back and say, wow, how sustainable is this? And, it resonates with me, the climate smart agriculture and forestry, because I think there's some interdependencies here that are pretty valuable. But we're seeing crops move north. We're seeing crops not grown in the south that were grown in the south. We're seeing watering, at night. We're seeing crops going away because there's not water. New species, new crops. We are challenging most everything we do due to these drought conditions. And yet we don't quit growing food and we can't quit growing fiber. These meet our basic needs. So I can really resonate with this process to step back and really challenge our own sustainability, our definitions of sustainability, in probably as complex of environment and natural resources that any of us have ever managed through, or those of us living have ever managed through. And that's, before we get to the 40-year inflationary pressures. So thank you for your leadership here. I think this makes sense to me.
Okay, Liz.
Yes, thank you for your presentation, Ryan and Danny. I think, very new to this process, but the things that I hear when you talk that pop up consistently is the term resiliency. And I agree with Carla that yes, we need sustainability. But when I think of resiliency and how you're trying to thread it through, that specifically speaks to the wildfire issues, the catastrophic events that are coming with this. So however this rolls out, I think following that theme will get us to a good place. It's also the place where, I've heard in any of the documents coming up with the carbon smart approach. I don't know if you are prepared for this in April, but Ryan, you talked about the Montreal process and how that was incorporated. And so that international sort of forestry protocols, everyone from Australia to Canada, to people, to countries in Europe use. I'd like to kind of know what didn't work with the criteria, because just my little understanding of it, they did really try to place some criterion indicators on the economics of it. And I think that's what everyone sort of struggles with, because it's an art and a science a bit. So it'd be kind of interesting to see what you all think and where you would take that in a forward thinking discussion that we want to have in April. So maybe there's some little treasures and gems in that. I'm looking forward to April. And the last thing, when you were going through this, Ryan, I just think about the scale of climate change. And so, repeatedly in our conversations today, we've been talking about the 642,000 acres that is state and then other responsibilities, on private lands. And it's big in the administrative boundary on the Pacific Northwest that we call Oregon. But we know that climate change is, the scale of it and the air masses and how we need to measure it is beyond that administrative boundary. And it includes national, forests. And then it includes what's happening in California every time California, burns and, smoke gets into Southwest Oregon and stays there for weeks. So I guess there's no question there. It's just thinking out loud about this, probably what everyone's doing is how do you consider the impacts of climate change and how do you measure the benefits of carbon sequestration outside of the administrative boundary? And what's the logic of it? And how do you measure the impacts? So nothing easy there, just more questions. But I keep on thinking that scale piece every time someone says climate change will do this. And so how do you put a big lasso around it and use what is important in that and logical? That's all I have. Thanks so much. Good luck to you. Looking forward to April.
Okay, Ben.
Thank you, Ben Darmling, for the record. I've been really inspired by this conversation. There's a lot of takeaways from Ryan and Danny from your presentation and from the comments. I echo the comments already. Carla, your comments are spot on. And Liz, I really like the term resilience. That's my word has been for years. And Danny, your use of the word bold, I think we need to rethink our paradigm about how we relate to our forests and as they change around us and make sure we can continue to have vibrant, productive, resilient forests. And so I'm excited to put words to these ideas and put this on paper. And I would also just really like to echo what Jim has said about who's this for, who's our audience, and make sure we identify that and write it for the right audience so that this is actually a document that's used and is impactful, because it is going to be a lot of work to make it. So I'm excited for the meeting in April.
Okay, thanks, Ben. Brenda?
Yeah, just to maybe pile on here a bit. If we build it, will they come? Right. So if we put all this effort into this planning exercise, which Ryan, I think is great. And you and Danny have thought a lot about this. But at the end of the day, when we have a document and it sets the direction for the future of forestry in Oregon, are the staff in ODF going to buy into that? And is it going to influence what they do on a day-to-day basis? And, I think I'm going to make a suggestion here, Cal, and I'm going to hopefully not make your life more complicated than it needs to be. But I wonder if there could be a statement that came from the executive group that you work with there in ODF regarding their commitment to moving forward with what is produced out of this process.
Okay. Thank you, Brenda. I You know, a couple of follow-up thoughts there. You know, specifically kind of going back to my, you know, how does this get used as a tool? And I think we need to remind Cal and Ryan and all that you know, we don't work at ODF every day. And I'm not suggesting that there be a polling process or whatever, but I would sure like, you know, whatever hearsay, walking around talk you have through the department and giving us a feel for what I was talking about before. Do you use this? What parts do you use? Do you never use it? Whatever, that'll be useful. I also would remind you all that there's no board member that's been on this board for more than 3.5 years. So when you talk about sort of, Ryan, when you talk about the indicators, that hasn't worked out so well. Well, we would love to, I think, understand why, what was the follow-up, what, or the total lack thereof, or whatever level, if there's parts of it that worked and didn't work, we're pretty blind to that. So I think we have to have, you know, in these first steps, there's things we need from you guys. It's so that we can be smart about how we move forward here. Okay, let me see. Cal?
Yeah, I just wanted to answer Brenda's request, and I think that'd be really appropriate to have a tone from the top. And, you know, I mean, this idea of inquiring, you know, what we do use, but I think we need to, you know, one of the things we're discussing is having a meeting, a half-hour Zoom meeting regularly with all forestry, where the director's office comes up and answers questions. And I think this will be important because the messages in this plan, we can repeat and reinforce as we're answering questions. And so I think that's the thing, is you can get to the people who are actually doing the work and getting them the messages that people closest to the action can make decisions quicker and within the framework that we think are important, then I think that's where we'll achieve some effectiveness here, Brenda. So I agree with you. I just wanted to say, good idea.
If I could respond, Jim.
You bet.
Thank you, Cal. I appreciate that a lot. And I think as Jim has tried to point out, that's a key part of the puzzle here to make sure that we're headed in a good direction for the agency. But by the same token, I think if you could listen to what your staff are saying, and if we're going off in a direction that is just completely you know, in la la land, we need to hear that too. So it needs to be a back and, you know, 360 degree feedback loop here.
Eric, can I just respond to that real quickly?
You bet.
Three quarters of communication is listening, and I agree with that 100%. So thank you.
Okay, with that, I think we can wrap up this item. Thank you very much, Danny, Ryan. Really appreciate it. Good conversation.